This is Radio Boston. I'm Scott Kirshner. $740 million. That's the amount that will be spent on economic development programs in the year ahead if Governor Baker signs a bill sent to him by the legislature late Sunday night. It includes funding for infrastructure projects, technical education, and cleaning up polluted properties, as well as a new tax deduction that's intended to encourage more families to save for college. What isn't in it? There's no change to the employee non-compete agreements that can sometimes prevent workers from leaving one company to work for another in the same business, or a provision that would have applied the state's hotel tax to short-term rentals such as Airbnb. To talk about this compromise bill and the state's economy overall, we're joined by Massachusetts Housing and Economic Development Secretary Jay Ash. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Hi, Scott.
So listeners, we'd also like to hear from you. What kind of jobs and development should we be encouraging in the state? And with high rents and real estate prices, do we need to build more housing? You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And you can send us a tweet at Radio Boston. So Secretary Ash, give us a couple concrete examples of what this measure will make happen in Massachusetts. And maybe we should start with the biggest piece of it, which is the $500 million that it allocates to the MassWorks infrastructure program.
Yeah, we're really excited about the MassWorks program. It allows us to invest in communities and to help communities attract additional investment. It's a classic program where the public sector puts up dollars to improve infrastructure, and then the business community comes in and creates jobs. So it's a connection that both Governor Baker and I feel are very strong for economic development reasons throughout the Commonwealth, and we've used it successfully in past years.
And I mean, give us some examples. This is like literally repairing bridges and building parking garages, and I mean, it's physical construction.
Yeah, it's physical construction. It can be water lines, it can be utility lines, it can be built parking garages, anything that is necessary in order to attract investment. And we try to make sure that we stretch it out throughout the entire Commonwealth so there are opportunities for small communities to improve their infrastructure and bigger communities to maybe build a parking garage in order to get somebody into their downtown.
So some other big pieces of change here, $45 million for what is called transformative development. So my understanding is that's focused on the gateway cities around Massachusetts, but explain what transformative development is.
Yeah, it's an exciting project. I actually worked on it when I was city manager in Chelsea, and now I'm happy to be able to champion it as secretary. But we believe that gateway cities are not only centers of their own communities, but centers of regions. And by building up the economy in a gateway city, we can support an entire region. This will allow us to go in and make strategic investments to projects that are truly transformative. So it's not, you know, a CVS on a corner. For instance, it would be occupying an empty building or an empty manufacturing space that's a centerpiece of a downtown or another district, and create opportunities that really transform the local economy and the regional economy.
Another $45 million goes to career and technical education. Are there some specific areas where we're trying to, you know, create more skilled employees or a more skilled workforce in Massachusetts where you see, you know, hey, there are jobs that are going open, unfilled, because we don't have the workers for them?
So the answer is yes to that, but I will answer that with a little story. I go around and I talk to businesses all the time. I talk to business leaders. I talk to trade associations. And I ask them all, what's the one thing you worry about for the future of the economy, the future of your business? And to a person, to a company, they've all said workforce. So whether you're in a retail establishment in a small business or you're one of the biggies who's doing something around life sciences, workforce development is important to you. So we're trying to figure out how to train tomorrow's workforce in order to allow for business to continue to grow and expand here in Massachusetts.
Give me an example of one thing that didn't wind up in the compromise bill that you would have liked to see. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that fell out Sunday night on Beacon Hill at the very last minute.
Sure. First, I would thank the legislature for giving us a really good bill. So both the Senate President and the Speaker and their conferees did a really good job at hammering out a bill that is going to make us even stronger here in Massachusetts. The one big thing that we were hoping to get was a provision that would allow us to be more competitive for extraordinary economic development opportunities. We're competing in Massachusetts with states in the United States and, in fact, all around the world. And other jurisdictions are laying out much better, much more lucrative incentive packages. So we were hoping to be able to do something around that.
Okay, so that, I plan to get to that later, and we're talking later in the show with Ann Klee from General Electric, who's been, you know, shepherding that company as it moves from Connecticut to Massachusetts. But, I mean, there was a fair amount of uproar around the size of the incentive package that the state and the city of Boston offered to GE. But this is, you're saying you wish there had been a pool of capital so you could do other deals like that in the future? Do you just think that that's table stakes and that's what you need to offer to attract big companies to Massachusetts?
Yeah, the interesting thing about the GE deal, and I think Ann would back this up as well, if GE was looking to get the most money out of the jurisdiction they were going to go in, they wouldn't have selected Massachusetts. So we weren't the most competitive in terms of dollars. What we were the most competitive was in innovation. We're finding a number of companies that would like to be here in Massachusetts, but they're just looking at the bottom line. And so I'm working with one company now. We think we might be able to offer them as much as $5,000 per job that they bring into Massachusetts. They have offices as high as $27,000 from neighboring states.
Mm-hmm.
So are
there particular industries that you're going after, you're getting a lot of interest from in the wake of GE's announcement, which was back in January?
Yeah, we do focus on certain sectors of the economy, life sciences, innovation, technology, advanced manufacturing and the like. But if there's an employer that's in an old industry that's in a place that's maybe outside of 128 or 495 and can be the bedrock, the cornerstone of a strong economy there, we'd like to have the resources to be able to help to bring them there.
Listeners, if you have questions for Secretary Ash, you can call us 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Or you can send us a tweet at Radio Boston. I want to ask about the tax holiday because Beacon Hill didn't pass a sales tax holiday for this August. They said it would cost the state too much revenue. The Retailers Association of Massachusetts is warning that this is really going to be hard on some neighborhood stores and local retailers because they rely on the surge in sales during the tax holiday. Do you worry about stores going out of business? What would you say to these neighborhood retailers?
I worry about stores all the time, but I don't think this particular situation, not having a sales tax holiday, will be the cause of a store going out of business. The Retailers Association has been very vocal about it, and I understand their desire to have this, but there are years where you're able to do more, and there are other years where you have to conserve, and right now we're facing budget difficulties, and we need to balance the budget. We're cutting programs all over the place. We feel like we should be keeping those dollars to protect the programs that we currently have, and we'll support retailers otherwise.
So I want to ask, you mentioned the shortfall. The Airbnb tax was a thing that I couldn't
sure.
understand because Airbnb, the company, said we're happy to be taxed in Massachusetts at the same level that a hotel stay would be taxed.
Sure.
And yet that wasn't included, in the final bill. So it's weird, if I'm in Harvard Square, I could stay at a hotel in Harvard Square and pay tax, or I could stay at somebody's Airbnb condo and not pay tax. And that would have generated, I think the estimate was like $20 million.
Yeah, it was a little bit less than that. But I'm glad you asked the question, because if it was just about Airbnb, then I think everybody on Beacon Hill would have agreed to it. But it was also about people who are down in the Cape and who have been renting their homes for years and using that money to pay the mortgage. It was a tax increase for some. And for those small owners of small properties down in the Cape or someplace else, they don't have the big lobby that Airbnb does to advocate for them and the ability to pay for that. So we didn't think the tax policy should be done in the economic development bill, but we do see a way that we can resolve this maybe next year.
I've been following the debate over employee non-compete agreements,
Oh, sure.
which is a mouthful, for 8 or 9 years now. As I describe it, these are contracts that many workers sign when they take a job, saying that for 6 months or a year, 18 months after you leave, you can't go to another employer in that industry. And they are signed by people who might be summer camp counselors or hairdressers
yep.
or software developers.
One, yeah.
Jimmy John's used yep. them for sandwich makers. Do you think this is a big issue for the state's economy, or are we just debating something that you don't think matters?
So Massachusetts is number one, according to Bloomberg, in the innovation economy. Massachusetts is number one, according to Milken, in terms of tech and science. So it's hard to say that it's limiting our economy. There are arguments, good arguments, both for and against non-competes. There is a desire by many on Beacon Hill to change the way that non-competes work now. As you know, the Baker administration, Governor Baker, had supported the House version of the non-competes, believing that something needs to happen. But we are seeing tremendous growth around the Commonwealth and especially around innovation. So it hasn't slowed things down. And in fact, we're red hot. Some might argue that we're white hot.
So you don't see this is not a problem to be this is not a painful problem that needs to be fixed by legislation.
This if you were thinking about your own personal health, you don't need to go to the doctor for surgery on this one. You might have to take an aspirin or two every now and then. And so I think it'll get resolved, but I don't think it's going to inhibit the growth. It certainly hasn't inhibited the growth that we're seeing now.
Listeners, we'd like to hear from you. With high rents and real estate prices, do we need to build more housing in Massachusetts? What would you like to see in your town or neighborhood? What economic issues are you worried about? You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And you can send us a tweet at Radio Boston. I want to touch on income inequality, which is a pretty big issue here in Massachusetts, particularly in Boston, which the Brookings Institution said was the most unequal major city in the country. In Boston, the wealthiest households make almost 18 times as much as households in the bottom. And top earners make about 30 times as much as the bottom 99%. Is there anything that you're doing to try to have an impact on that, you and your agency?
Yes. Directly, the Economic Development Bill allows us to do more workforce training. So we'll be increasing our workforce training allocation by 100% over previous year's allocations to try to train people up to access the great jobs. First of all, you want to bring great jobs in, and so we're doing more of that, and then we do the workforce training. Additionally, we have some discussions going on with stakeholders to talk about other ways that we can address income inequality. We do recognize that there's a economic prosperity issue that we want to be able to spread across the entire Commonwealth. We're real pleased to see high-paying jobs here, and what we need to do is we need to find additional ways to have the average folk be able to access those high-paying jobs.
Let's go to a caller, if we can, in just a minute, who wants to come back to the non-compete issue. One follow-up on income inequality. You grew up in Chelsea. You mentioned you were the Chelsea city manager. For a time in your life, your family lived in subsidized housing. What does it mean for you when you look at income inequality as you travel around the state?
You know, there was a time when my family fell on hard times, and we grew up on welfare, and we were in affordable housing. I remember being appalled by the way the system held back my mother from accessing jobs and earning a living that we could afford to then get out of the public housing situation we're in. So that's one of the things that I bring to the table. It's ironic now that here I am. I'm in charge of housing for the state and talk with public housing people all the time. And so we're engaged in a discussion where we can reward people for work while still making sure that we have a safety net for those who need our help.
All right. Now I want to get to Steve, who's calling from Westboro. Steve, go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to make a point about the whole non-compete thing. I think there's a sensible compromise that could be made that, you know, for people making less than, let's say, $50,000 a year, they shouldn't be subject to a non-compete. For highly compensated people, highly skilled, it's a different thing, and that's my point.
So that seems like it would be an easy change to make, and I think that was at one point proposed, is let's set an income threshold where, you know, below $50,000 or $75,000 or whatever it is. Your response?
Let's elect Steve is my fresh response. Yeah, Steve's absolutely right. And there was a lot of discussion about that. So the bill was close, but there were these points about income thresholds and about how long somebody should be paid after they separate that held up the bill. But I think if you asked the individual legislators, they would say that they think Steve is right on and that low-paying employees shouldn't be held to the same standards as people who are making millions of dollars a year.
We're talking about economic development in Massachusetts with Jay Ash, who is the Housing and Economic Development Secretary. Let's shift the discussion to housing and hear from Tina, who's calling from Sherbourne. Tina, go ahead.
Hi. Hi, yes. I was just calling with a concern. I have two daughters, both in their 20s, both gainfully employed. Both went away to school, you know, to college, and then came back to the Boston area. And I really see a fairly grim future in terms of affordable housing for them in the city. Lots of wonderful luxury high-rises going up that none of these millennials, well, at least not the kids who have normal jobs, can afford. And I'm just wondering what can be done about the situation, because there really does need to be more affordable housing, particularly for this group that's trying to sort of make their start and get a toehold in this economy.
It's a great question. I mean, I'd love to hear your answer. I mean, one of the constant refrains you hear is we need more workforce housing, right, which is between subsidized housing and this kind of luxury high-end housing that seems to have no problem getting built.
Yeah, we talk about affordable housing, which is the traditional stuff, the things that I grew up in when my family was in trouble. And then we talk about housing that's affordable, and that's for people who may be working but still are paying a higher percentage of their income than they should be. Workforce housing is a major priority of the governor, and so the governor has been working with Mass Housing on releasing a major new program around workforce housing. We generally agree with the comment. The more housing we can build, the better. We also recognize that it's going to be impossible to build the number of units that will support everybody who wants to live in Boston. And we were talking earlier off the air about what's happening in Chelsea, the Chelseas of the world, where there's major development going on now in places that weren't traditionally seen as residential enclaves. So the pressure of finding housing has pushed people out a little bit further and a little bit further. You think about neighborhoods in Boston that have seen tremendous growth. It's a result of people looking for those places that are more affordable, that are close into Boston.
Is there enough, if we think about within 128 maybe, is there enough land that's available to developers today? And where are we going to see more development inside the 128 belt?
More land is certainly helpful. There are a number of issues involved. I talk with Secretary Pollock, who's the Secretary of Transportation, all the time, and sometimes we talk about this as more of a transportation problem. If we had if we were able to get public transportation out to places that don't have it, all of a sudden we would unlock other affordable housing options for people. So we're looking at it from a housing perspective, but we're also looking at it holistically and wondering what else we can do around policy or initiative to support housing development throughout Greater Boston.
There's a comment on Twitter from Ron Hebshi who says, Massachusetts is a tech hub, but many towns in the state have only one option for high-speed internet. We need alternatives to Comcast. Is that something your agency works on or you've been involved with?
I have been involved with it as a city manager. When I was city manager at Chelsea, I worked on it a lot because we only had the one option. I agree with that, the spirit of that. The governor has actually been personally involved in looking at technology, especially to towns that don't have any, and we're very pleased to see the growth there. We are talking with the utility companies, the cable providers, and trying to encourage them. We don't have any direct control over that, but we're trying to encourage it. You know, the Verizon has recently made some decisions to come into Boston, and it's as much about the market forces as it is about government regulation.
I'd love to talk a little bit about maybe the economy outside of Route 128. You probably have traveled to a lot of these towns where they're looking at an industrial, mill town heritage that just doesn't have the jobs anymore. What's your take on how we spur more job creation, whether it's in North Adams or in Worcester or New Bedford?
That's a great question about North Adams, because I was there 2 weekends ago to talk to local townsfolks about their hopes for North Adams and that general area of northern Berkshire County. I've been to 125 communities, and what I've learned in that is that growing up in Boston, growing up in Chelsea, I got spoiled. Being right next to Boston, the hub of New England, arguably the hub of the universe. Outside of 128, outside of 495, there's a different type of opportunity. The economic development bill that we've adopted allows us to tap into that. So we're trying to bring life sciences and biomanufacturing out to places like Worcester. Alnylam has just announced that they're going to be building down in Norton, a manufacturing facility.
That's a biotech that's based in Cambridge, but doing manufacturing in Norton?
That's correct. And up on in Merrimack Valley, Kronos has just announced a major expansion plan up on the North Shore, up in Merrimack Valley. So we are trying to stretch things out. We're also looking at helping communities outside of 495 to develop industrial parks or business parks. And I want to talk just a couple seconds about innovation. The value of innovation, we think of innovation, you're going to think about GE as you're talking to GE, but innovation is in every community and every person in every community. So we have a fund actually now, thanks to the legislature, to help spur innovation in smaller communities. I was recently out in Orange, Mass. They have an innovation center in the just outside their downtown, and was very excited about the thought that they will be able to grow organically from within their community to spur job development and economic vitality.
We can still get in a few more questions. If you've got one, you can call us for Secretary Jay Ash at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can send us a tweet also at Radio Boston. You're a Democrat working in a Republican administration. I'm curious what the biggest challenge has been or the biggest adjustment for you.
You know, I thought the first time that I had a meeting with the governor and a cabinet, there would be some sort of orientation, a Republican 101. This is what it's like to be in a Republican administration. And much to my pleasure, it hasn't happened. And the reason why it hasn't happened is that Governor Baker doesn't care about the Republican way of doing things or the Democratic way of doing things. He only cares about the right way of doing things. So every time I come to a crossroads, I say, what's the right thing to do? And so far, Scott, that hasn't failed me. I've actually enjoyed the opportunity to be in a Republican administration because it's broken down a number of the preconceived notions I had about working in a Republican administration. And I'm actually more appreciative of the bipartisanship that we've been able to develop with the Democratic legislature and believe that we here in Massachusetts have something to offer to the rest of the country in terms of working together to get good public policy done.
We have, you mentioned you were in Beacon Hill Sunday night for the marathon session there on Sunday, trying to get everything, all the compromises done and everything handed over to the governor. We now have a few months before the next legislative session starts. What's on your list? What's on your agenda as we head into the fall?
Well, not only was I there late at night, but I was there early in the morning. So we were there the wee hours and very grateful that we were able to get an economic development bill done. What we're doing right now is now we have to review the bill that was adopted by the legislature, make a determination if we're going to sign it or not. And then once that gets done, we'll turn our attention fully to calendar year 17. We've been talking about small business supports. We've been talking about housing production. We've been talking about income equality, economic prosperity. We've been talking, my shop, I also deal with consumer affairs, and looking to do more of what works. And more of what works is the governor's, one of the governor's great refrains, do more of what works and less of what doesn't. Well, what's been working is we've been doing outreach to communities, outreach to businesses, and we've had great reaction about their willingness to invest here in Massachusetts.
We heard earlier this year there have been efforts to kind of create support and funding and a place for digital healthcare startups, the digital health cluster in Boston. I've heard there is some activity in the robotics world to create a shared space where maybe you'd have startups and some shared machinery in Cambridge. Give me an update on, is that something that's still alive and we may see happen?
Yes. First of all, I'm excited about what we're doing in digital health, and we're going to make great outcomes possible for people because of what we're doing in digital health. In the robotics area, it's one of 11 areas of emerging technology that we see a real strong role in. So we're working with Mass Robotics. We're working with institutions like MIT and WPI and the UMass system. And we believe we're going to be a major player in robotics.
Let's see if we can take one last question here. I'm going to give you the hardest one for last.
Oh, I asked for softballs. Okay, go ahead.
We're here, going to hear from Mary calling in from Worcester. Mary, go ahead.
Hi, yes. I work for a rental property management company, and we try to keep our rent reasonable on basic apartments. But our fixed costs are increasing drastically every year between the real estate taxes, water and sewer bills have gone way up in Worcester. Electric bills, 37% increase in 1 year. Property increases. Our property insurance went up 20% in 1 year. The next year, 10%. It's outrageous what we're paying for just property insurance. And I don't know if anything can be done about that because, you know, ultimately it ends up getting passed down to the renters.
Yeah, it's a great question. Certainly things that none of us have control over continue to go up, but there are things that we can't control. We're trying to, on Beacon Hill, live within our means. You know, the no new taxes part of the budget we've been cutting when we have to. I joke with the governor all the time that I've been in his employ for 18 months, and I've had to cut my budget five times in 18 months. So we're trying to make sure that we're living within our means, and then we don't have to raise costs to people even more.
All right. I think we should wrap up there in the interest of time. Jay Ash is the Secretary of Housing and Economic Development. Thank you, Mr. Secretary.
Scott, great to see you.
Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Scott Kirshner. This is Radio Boston.